Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Celebrate our God-given freedom and faith while honoring our Blessed Mother with Ghirelli's USA Rosary. Each state is represented on this rosary's 50 beads. Red, white, and blue enamel adorn its patriotic crucifix. Get yours today. Shop www.ghirelli.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello and welcome to Real Living. This is Levita with Mary Lou Nemecek, and we are going to continue our study of the prophet Isaiah in these next few shows. Basically, this is a dress rehearsal for the semester-long study that we will be having at the Cathedral of Christ the King in Lexington for Catholic Way Bible Study beginning in the fall of 2019. You know, the last show, I was listening to myself in the first couple shows, and I said that I was going to make this a half semester. But actually, while I was been writing these lectures and studying, I decided to make the study of Isaiah a 21-week study. So we're going to be studying this for the entirety of the 2019-2020 school year, because there's just too much material. I have excised the woe oracles, and I've excised all kinds of stuff, but there's still a bunch of stuff that would have been cut out, and it's just not fair. So what we're going to do, and if you want to be on our Catholic Revival...
I was going to say, this is just a taste of it. We want everyone to sign up and come to Christ the King for the Catholic Way Bible Study beginning in September for this study. And we don't want to...
Yeah, and if
discourage
you want more information,
you from doing that.
If you want more information, please go to CWBS.org, which is the initials of Catholic Way Bible Study, CWBS.org. Please download our app on the App Store, Catholic Way Bible Study on iTunes, and contact Breadbox Media and tell them to tell me that you want to be on our email list, and I will be sending you newsletters about what we're doing in Catholic Way Bible Study, just different ways of staying posted. I just sent out a newsletter in which I announced that I was going to extend the book of Isaiah to 21 weeks and then the book of Psalms to 21 weeks in the year 2020-2021, God willing, if we're all still here. So that's the plan. So in any case, last time I went back and looked and listened, and I think we were in the middle of trying to establish a historical framework for what was going on. I do know that this is a very turbulent time in the Kingdom of Israel, in that whole area, really. Remember, there's a succession of great world powers on the stage. First, the Assyrians in the 8th century, then the Babylonians in the 7th century, and then the Persians in the 6th century. And then, of course, you know, after the Persians, there's Alexander the Great and his successors and all that, leading up to the birth of Christ. But we're still relatively a long time ago. You know, we're still in the 8th century at this point while we're discussing the prophet Isaiah. But even though it is in the 8th century, a long time ago, B.C., it's still the kinds of things that he's talking about have great application to us today. We may not have problems with people going to the high places and worshiping Asherah poles and pillars and and that kind of thing, and sacrificing their firstborn of the fire, but we do have people queuing up at abortion clinics to sacrifice their children to the idols of convenience or choice. We do have, we may not have, you know, sanctioned orgies, sacred orgies in the temples of the pagan gods, but God knows we have other kinds of things going on in our culture today that are rather unholy. The problem of syncretism that they experienced back then, where they kind of mix, they tried to mix their faith with all the other faiths, just make a little pleasant potpourri. Today, we call that the cafeteria mode. You know, we call that trying to go in and pick and choose the things that we like out of the faith and discharge the things that we don't think are convenient and mix them up with, I don't know, near a Far Eastern transcendental spiritualities and, you know, anything that makes all the things that look like fun, all the spiritual fun and none of the spiritual duties. But unfortunately, or fortunately, because we are made out of flesh, we do require discipline, and we just need to have the whole faith unadulterated. And so there we are. That's kind of where we are at this point. That's a very turbulent time of history. And, of course, Isaiah is prophesying to the kings of Judah who are, for the most part, not doing a good job of staying faithful to the covenant. And so the judgment of the prophets is always that. There is a covenant. You have broken it. Judgment is coming. God will remove the land, the kings, and the blessing. But there is hope because he will restore the land. He will restore the king in the form of Jesus, who is of the house of David. And through Jesus, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And those, of course, are the three prongs of the Abrahamic covenant. Now, I thought it might be a good idea to kind of get into the bulk of the study. And I don't really remember last time. Did you put a marker, Mary Lou, in where we stopped last time? Did we stop? Had we already started the book? I think we were in chapter one, perhaps. I think it's important to see that we have. Okay, so in starting the book of the prophet Isaiah, the first five chapters of Isaiah are basically they're like a summary of all the material that he's going to be talking about in the subsequent chapters. It's all not until chapter six that he is called to be a prophet. So why not put the material in chapter 6 and chapter 1, right? Why not put the call at the very beginning? Well, I think the books that I've been reading say that he decided he was going to sum up the necessity for prophecy, the necessity for his ministry up front. So chapter 1 is rather depressing because it's about the covenant breach of the people. And that's just, you know, it's heartbreaking. The heartbreak of God shows through in as much as we can ascribe any kind of heartbreak to God, okay? The first verse, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of you. And then he lists the four kings that he prophesied under. Remember, we said in prior shows that Isaiah prophesied for over half a century, and that he was an extremely old man when he was martyred by the fifth king, the son of Hezekiah Manasseh. So he lists Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, the kings of Judah. So again, remember, we are in the south, the kings of Judah, the capital at Jerusalem, the tribe of Judah with the half-tribe of Benjamin. Whereas, of course, we have the kingdom in the north with the 10 tribes. But that kingdom has already disappeared because in 721, the Assyrians roll in and destroy Samaria, deport the kings, the royals, the nobles, the artisans, the engineers, the architects, the writers, the poets, the sculptors, the merchants, basically anybody who was going to be in use that was deported, and everybody who was left on the land was then mixed up with other captive populations that the Assyrians that's kind of how they ensure that people would be, nobody would be left to take revenge. So the first verse is always kind of dry because you're like, okay, let's move on to the meat of the deal. But it's important to see that for one thing, he is a visionary. So Isaiah has been called a seer because that's what he is. He's a seer. He sees and he perhaps hears vision, which then are written down. The vision of Isaiah, which he saw, and it's about what's going to happen to Judah and Jerusalem. in verse 2, remember, this is a prophecy of judgment, but also consolation. So in the very first chapter, it kind of sums up all the things that are going to happen to the kingdom of Israel, which, you know, is always very, I'm trying to see if I saved myself a spot. No, I don't think I did. All right. So if we've gone through this material again, just bear with us. I think it bears some repetition. This is pretty dense material, but it is in the first chapter that we find that there are the twin themes of judgment and consolation. So in the first verse, he introduces himself. It's a superscription, it's called. It's like an introduction. And then the first word of chapter 2 is here. And the word, the Hebrew word for here, connotes also to listen and to put into practice. The word here is translated from Shema. Shema. So, you know, you've heard, if you've been around any Jews, Shema Yisrael, hear, O Israel. So hear, O heavens, and give ears, O earth. That is basically a call to a courtroom type situation. Basically, the heavens and the earth have been called to be witnesses to the covenant breach of Judah and Jerusalem. Did you find anything else in these verses, these first two verses, Mary Lou?
No, and I'll just mention, since we're at two different locations, sometimes you are breaking up on me today. So I'm not getting everything that you're saying. But no, the hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, is for the Lord speaks. And whenever someone says the Lord speaks, you better get up and pay attention to this. This is important. This is life-changing.
That's right. So he opens, basically, the tribunal, like the courtroom, is open with hear, O heavens, in verses 2 through 4, because who will be judged? Well, the people is going to be judged. The nation and its leaders are going to be judged. And then all the other surrounding nations and creation itself are going to be judged. So you have an expansion of the theme of judgment for sin that goes from the individual to the cosmic in a certain sense. All right. So those in a certain sense are also the themes of the entire book of Isaiah. Right. So Uzziah now was a king of Judah, and he was kind of a wishy-washy king. You can read about him in 2 Kings. And unfortunately, around 750 BC, Uzziah became a leper around age 35, which kind of was a bummer, as we would like to say, because there were no antibiotics, and you eventually died of leprosy. We say that he was a wishy-washy king, although he wasn't a wicked king, but he did allow that the worship of the Canaanite deities would continue, and that he allowed his people to participate in these cults. In other words, what? He was lukewarm. And Mary Lou, what does God say? What does Jesus say about people who were lukewarm in Revelation?
Better that you
be colder.
You're putting me on the spot. I'm thinking better that you never would have been born than to be lukewarm, but that's not correct.
It's better that you be cold or hot. And because you are neither cold nor hot, I will what? I will vomit you out of my mouth. Uzziah is wishy-washy. He's lukewarm. And so it's probably not a surprise that he gets stricken with leprosy, poor guy. I mean, kind of feel sorry for him. But on the other hand, double-mindedness and lukewarmness and being compromised, it really never pays off. I guess that's what we should say, right?
Right.
And that's a call for us. There's Catechism 2013, Catechism of the Catholic Church 2013 says, all Christians in any state or walk of life are called to the fullness of Christian life into the perfection of charity. All are called to holiness. All are called to holiness. Because there's a way, especially old-fashioned Catholicism, right? Where people would say, oh, well, we're just, you know, working stiffs and we have families and we're just going to leave the perfection thing or the holiness thing or the whatever thing to the priests and the nuns and the monks and all that stuff. But actually, that is a requirement of Christian life, not to be lukewarm, not to be double-minded, not to be on the fence. And unfortunately, there's a big tendency today to just do that, right? There's also a section 2544 which speaks of Jesus telling his disciples, look, you have to prefer me over everything and everyone. And in fact, what do? They renounce all that they have for his sake and for that of the gospel. So that's a very important precept, not to have your belongings own you, but for you to own your belongings and to use them in a detached manner. So back to the courtroom. In the courtroom of God's judgment, there's a judgment of Jerusalem for covenant breach. Isaiah addresses Judah and Jerusalem in most of his prophecies, although he occasionally addresses others. So Jerusalem will also be called by the name Zion. If you hear Daughter Zion or Zion, you will know that that's kind of what he's talking about, okay? So that here, it's and the way that verses 2 through 4 and beyond bring it is like, it's like the lament of a father. It's a father's lament over his child's ignorant disobedience. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, which also obviously brings to mind things in Deuteronomy, but where the Lord says that Israel, he had raised Israel like his own sons, but they had rebelled against him. So Israel's sonship, so what can we glean from this? One, Israel is God's child, God's son. But two, that they have rebelled. They're not listening. They're willfully rebellious, willfully ignorant. Unfortunately, that's the sons have I reared and brought up, but they have rebelled against me. And then he says, look, even dumb animals know their owners, but my people does not understand. So there's a lot of, it goes to understanding and comprehension. Verse 4, sinful nation, people laden with iniquity, sons who deal corruptly, they have despised the Holy One of Israel. They are utterly estranged. Can we apply that to our society today? Isn't that amazing? And remember also, Holy One of Israel, that is one of Isaiah's favorite ways of calling the Lord. He seems to have coined that phrase, the Holy One of Israel, and he used it, I think, a good 35 times in his writings. And it continues in verse 4, and this is where we get into the woe oracles. Woe as in W-O-E, as in you're in trouble. But I love this bit is the word, the exclamation that we say, verse 4, ah, sinful nation. That little sigh, ah, is actually the Hebrew oi. And if you know any Jewish people, you know that when they complain about this stuff, what do they say? Oy vey. You've ever heard of that? Oy vey. Well, oy, that even today's Yiddish exasperated sort of little throwaway line, comes from the Hebrew hoy, which is a lament, which means ah. And we have that right here. Verse 4, ah, sinful nation. It could be oy vey, sinful nation. A people laden with iniquity, offspring of evildoers, sons who deal corruptly. The thing is just so sad. I mean, it's so sad. But lest we feel so superior or too superior, it's something that happens, unfortunately, in every generation, right? So this basically what we see is kind of a form of lament. And even the meter that, the literary meter that Isaiah uses shifts to kind of a funeral dirge kind of thing. It's a sinful nature, and in God's eyes, the nation and the people are all sore and bruised by this rebellion and how it affects, because we know that sin is never good for you, right? That sin is never a healthy thing. We might maybe sometimes think it's fun, but sin, the results of sin in our flesh are always negative. And that is why he says in verse 7, your cities are burned with fire. Your country lies desolate. In other words, you were once a garden, but now you're a burned desert because of sin, right? And in verse 8, he says, O daughter of Zion is like a booth in a vineyard. So what's the background? The background is daughter Zion, Jerusalem, used to live in beautiful palaces, but now she's living in shacks or sheds or temporary houses. And this will happen. When the Assyrians invade Judah in 701 and burn the fields and the towns, the locals will actually resort to protect their property and have to escape and live in lean-tos and shacks to shelter away from the invasion. So it's also, in a certain way, a kind of prophecy for the coming Assyrian troubles. In verse 9, we have the idea that somehow God is going to preserve his people. They don't deserve it, but he will preserve them. And then finally, verse 10 is a judgment, another judgment. Hear, Shema, the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. So basically what's he doing? He's comparing Judah and Jerusalem with Sodom and Gomorrah, who are used as examples of institutionalized sin, sin as a lifestyle. You know, Mary Lou, as I'm reading all these things and I'm writing these lectures, I just get chills up and down my spine because I'm thinking Sodom and Gomorrah are used as examples of institutionalized sin, sin as a lifestyle. Where have you seen that?
Well, it's a description of the world that we're living in today. We're doing that today. We have spurned the Holy One. We have chosen to go down our own path, to ignore, you know, our Lord, who we should listen to all the time. Mm-hmm. We have the full picture. That's what's so sad. We have the whole story. They didn't even have the whole story then,
right?
You know?
We're more capable than they are, right?
Right. Right. So I, in my mind, it's a little bit more serious for us today than it was for them, in a sense.
I know. And that's why I just, in a certain way, I was kind of feeling like, holy cow, this is serious stuff.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, right? That's how we close this this show. Thank you for joining us. Please join us next time.
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bach with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at CaneFord.com.